The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I am your host. It is Monday, May the 18th. Another week, another, you know, we're keeping on. Hope you're doing well out there. Download, subscribe, rate, and review. If you leave a question, a five-star question, we will answer it on a hashtag Mailbag Monday. Which is what this is, featuring the NFL Super Friends. We will be talking about Michael Jordan as well. I didn't start watching the MJ documentary on ESPN at the exact time as everybody else when it first premiered, but I have caught up, and I've watched like every episode two or three times. It is friggin' awesome. The ratings are ridiculous. Like 7 million people getting together on a Sunday night to watch like a show about Michael Jordan and all this stuff that we already knew. It's still riveting, you know, for, especially for NBA fans such as myself. I don't know about Debo, if he's enjoying it or not. Are you guys, the NFL super friends, are you watching?
I will say, as the Michael Jordan of this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You mean yourself?
Yes. I mean myself.
No, I think I'm the Michael Jordan of the podcast.
No, you're the Judd Bushler of this podcast.
By the way, I love it was so clear that Breach was talking about himself and Britton somehow thought it was about him genuinely.
Well, I would say that Ryan would say, I mean, like MJ, all his teammates hated him.
Yeah, but MJ was actually good at his
job. But yeah, I was just going to say, he was at least good.
It was just kind
of, hey, play the music! Play the music!
Oh, I don't have it hooked up.
But I will say, I think I'm a casual NBA fan. I watch a few games a season. I'm not watching it every single night. But this is, I mean, it's been utterly fascinating. I think the Jordan era was the last time I was watching games all the time. And like, I'm hooked on it. And I watch it, Brinson spoils it for me on Twitter Sunday night, but I do watch it every Monday morning.
Well, that's not true because I haven't tweeted about it once on Sunday night.
What? Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
That must be your fake account I follow. Your burner.
I'm sure Sean's tweeting about it, though.
No, I actually haven't watched a single second of it.
Are you serious?
Goodness, Sean.
Wow. I did watch the first three episodes, and then I waited because my 13-year-old wanted to start watching it, and we just haven't synced up our times. You know who does tweet about it a lot on Sunday nights? Mr. Eric Debo. So I have to close Twitter when I'm watching.
Oh, Debo does tweet about it a lot. Following Debo's had some good tweets, and I favored them, but the algorithm – you know, obviously the algorithm forces more tweet. Like if you favorite somebody's tweets a couple of times, they start jamming their tweets down your throat. I got a lot of Debo tweets in there.
Oh, I get a lot of Brinson tweets.
I can imagine.
Everybody does.
Right. Every time at the time I saw like my dad's feed on his laptop for Twitter, like he followed like five people. It's like the Wall Street Journal and me. And it's just like, it's a picture of like my face like 40 times and then like occasionally like a Wall Street Journal article in there. I was like,
oh, man's trying to get the news and all he gets is Brinson's face every 45 seconds.
Some snarky, yeah, it's like a video of like Ryan Tannehill falling down while trying to make a throw or like a sarcastic joke.
Damn it, Brinson, get off my computer.
Yeah, I looked at it and I was like, that looks terrible. Like, can you imagine like just all you load up Twitter is just me?
Yeah, that's like, that's how you punish. Like, you know, those dictators, when they would flush them out of their homes at the end of their reigns, they would, like, blast rock music. They just sit you in a room, peel your eyes open and make you read Brinson tweets 24/7. That's how you
read. Wilson, have you heard of, I mentioned this to Breach the other day, but have you heard about the Wind of Change podcast?
I saw you guys mention that somewhere. What are the specifics of it?
It is a, did we talk about this already, Sean?
No.
Have you heard about it?
No. I was just laughing at it.
The guy who hosts it, he writes for the Atlantic, and he's been told this theory by former CIA guys. He's trying to prove it by interviewing everybody that do the podcast about it, is that the CIA wrote Wind of Change for the Scorpions as a way to create political unrest in the Soviet Union and to tear down the Berlin Wall and to take out the Soviet Union. But like, it's a first of all, that's everything I want in a podcast. Like right there, like music, yeah. A conspiracy.
By the way, those CIA guys, best songwriters in history, just happen to be intelligence community.
Well, but it's weird because like the Wind of Change is not popular. It was not popular in America, but it's like wildly popular in
every time you hear it, at least because I grew up in the '80s, you think about the Berlin Wall coming down. Berlin Wall, right?
Yeah, the Berlin Wall. Yes. Yeah, that's what it's about. I mean, they're German rockers, and like
Scorpions are German.
Yeah,
I didn't know
Klaus Weindersland or something like that is cool. The lead singer's name. I didn't know that either until I started listening to the podcast. So I'm like 2.5 episodes in. I highly recommend it.
I will say quickly, Debo's got me onto these true crime podcasts, and his recommendations are really good. I've had to take a break from them because I listen to them at night, and then I wake up having terrible thoughts. And then I can't go do things normally because I'm like, all right, is someone going to jump out from behind this tree and hit me in the head with a sledgehammer or something? So they're good in small doses.
Anyway, let's get to we mentioned Michael Jordan. So here's the question. What is the closest thing that the NFL has? Who is the NFL's version of Michael Jordan? This is, you could take this question whichever direction you want. And since Breach is most likely to take it in a weird direction, you can go first.
You know what? I'm actually probably going to steal someone's answer. Probably Sean, since he copies off everything I say. I am going to say, sorry, Sean, I already took Brinson down. I got to take it.
Let's see. Now I go
around
really...
the horn here.
Are you going to say the Chiefs?
I am going with Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady would be the most fascinating person, or the Patriots, or Belichick. Just that whole part right there. If you told me, this whole thing's coming out 23 years from now. 23 years from today, we got a 10-part documentary on Brady's final season in New England and kind of how everything imploded. I would watch that in a second, and all the way up into him leaving New England. If we had a 10-part documentary on their 2016 season where he got suspended, flew to Italy for the first part of the season, hung out with Giselle and didn't even care about what was going on, they came back and won the Super Bowl, I would watch that. If we got a 10-parter on Brady in 2001 getting the QB job and the Patriots winning the Super Bowl as a 14-point underdog, there's like 5 different Patriots seasons that I would watch a 10-part documentary on.
I was going to say the same answer, but for different reasons.
Go ahead. You can.
I like how you went to Breach thinking you'd get a weird answer. Then he said Tom Brady, which I feel like is probably the most common answer.
I feel like it's the worst answer.
I think it's the right answer because I think the way we measure how great players are and compare them to other players throughout history in their respective sports is with championships, assuming that they are the star player in that team and not like a Robert Horry type, because they've won the same amount of championships. Michael Jordan.
You don't say Robert Horry?
That's not how you say his name.
What's that?
Brinson.
Judd Bush.
And you make fun of me for not being able to pronounce things. That guy is a multi-time NBA champion.
Oh, please. He's a glorified ring bearer.
Okay. 7 rings.
I did not mean to spark a Robert Horry discussion. But I think Tom Brady and Michael Jordan, when you're arguing if they're the best player in their respective sports, it always starts with the 6 championships. And I think the other argument you probably expected me to make is Patrick Mahomes. How I would argue.
I would hope you would have the gosh darn sensibility not to suggest a third year NFL quarterback comparing him to Michael Jordan. I would hope that you would have the sensibility to not do that, and yet you did it anyway.
No,
I'm surprised you didn't say Jay Cutler.
Yeah, that was coming. That was
That's not a dunking. And I like that he got properly dunked on earlier, did not have the audio, and all of a sudden now he has found the audio for not even a dunking. I wasn't going to say Patrick Mahomes. I was going to compare Mahomes to LeBron when LeBron was starting out. I think he has a chance to unseat Brady as the greatest of all time, and that's going to be something we monitor. But ultimately, people are going to say, did he win as many Super Bowls? Just like how LeBron is compared to MJ, and it's always that he hasn't won as many championships.
John, what's your answer? You've been talking for 10 minutes. What's your
answer? Tom Brady.
See, I think that, I think Mahomes is it's a trash answer. And if you suggest Mahomes, it shows that you're clearly like a 25-year-old with an 8-year-old brain. I think that the Tom Brady answer, equally questionable. I understand that the GOAT factor applies here with Tom Brady, but like the whole thing with Jordan is a 90s nostalgia thing. And like stuff we haven't seen before and like stories being told. Like we know everything about the Patriots.
We don't know everything about the Patriots. That's ridiculous. We don't know everything at all. We don't even know
what Ernie Adams does.
Jesus. Brinson, that's so inaccurate. I can't believe you just said that.
No. We know Tom Brady's already done his own documentary called Tom versus Time. There's only so many times I can watch Did you watch it? I can only watch him get a thigh massage so many times.
Did you watch that documentary? Yes, you did.
And nobody was tuning in on a random Sunday night to watch it like The Last Dance.
But that was just Tom Brady. If you use everyone, if Belichick is in this, if it's the Patriots have the
if you wait like 20 years too after he retires, people have more interest. People don't have interest in it when it's happening right now.
When Breach started, I was like, yeah. And then as he talked, the more I thought about it, if you did this documentary next year, I think people would watch it. If you got to find out things like, who is Ernie Adams? More importantly, how much does Tom Brady really hate Bill Belichick? If that was a conversation, I think people want to know about that. The same with Josh McDaniels. So I would want to know about that. I want to know about, like, not about his marriage, but like how much is Giselle buying in? How much does she yell and scream at him for doing stuff? Like,
she told Howard Stern she wrote a letter saying he needed to be a better parent.
So I mean, those are things I want to hear about. And I'm sure I would imagine.
You mean Yoko Bunchen?
I would imagine. I was going to say she feels like she wears the pants in that relationship. And I would imagine Tom Brady would probably admit that, not knowing them or their relationship at all, but just sort of on the outside looking in.
I mean, we're definitely less than 3 years away from Tom Brady wearing a pantsuit to a Met Gala.
But I mean, to Sean and John's point, I think we scratched the surface on what we know about because they're so like Derek Jeter, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning talking points. You get nothing out of them. So the Facebook thing was sort of a neat little glimpse, but it was, you know, it was sugarcoated because it was by Tom's people.
I'll agree with the construct that, and I guess this is sort of how I was thinking, like in 15 or 20 years, if you can convince everybody on the Patriots team, the 2019 Patriots team to come back and talk openly and honestly about this stuff, the way that the Bulls are doing it now, then yeah, I'll buy it. But like, I really do think that because things that are happening in 2018 and 2019 and 2020 are just like the coverage of it is so intense. Like, I guess the difference to me is that I think the answer is Brett Favre and the Packers. Like, I think that would be fascinating because you get this throwback, sense of a, like, you feel like you're taken to a sort of a different time, and to relive some, like, reliving the Jordan stuff. And even Brett Favre is not far enough back to make it like the whole Jordan thing.
96.
But the time jump's taking it back to the 80s, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in Jordan, with Jordan, we're hopping all around our childhood.
So I think the answer to the Patriots point is that you just make it about their whole dynasty so you can hop. I mean, you could have the coaches openly talk about Aaron Hernandez. I mean, there are some seriously very good topics that you could spend an entire episode on if you just cover the entire dynasty, which is kind of what they did with Jordan. They covered his whole career, you know, using the last season as the focus, obviously.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of the other problem that I have with the Tom Brady answer is that the whole key to The Last Dance is that Michael Jordan and David Stern agreed to let this be filmed, knowing that they both had to sign off on it before it could ever be released. And I don't think Bill Belichick would ever sign off on allowing that to happen.
Yeah, what's in it for him? But I mean, that's not the question. The question is, what do you want to see?
Well, and two, the other thing, I mean, no, look, of course, if you had full inside access to the Patriots, season of the Patriots, absolutely, that would be awesome. I just question whether or not it would be pulled off at that level. And like, additionally, we sort of have, you know, like a season when it comes to just like a regular modern football season. Like, you know, we have the Amazon stuff. We have the Hard Knocks. We sort of knows what goes into that. So that's the other reason I would want to throw it back to something that's a little bit older. I mean, Deion Sanders already has a 30 for 30. I think he's a pretty good answer. I would personally want somebody who could give me that 90s childhood nostalgia. And I'm just trying to think how about the big three Cowboys? Like, that would be insane.
Yeah. I mean, you got the crazy story of like Michael Irvin, going after someone.
Yeah. And then like, of course, there may or may not have been drugs involved.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Cowboys, absolutely. People would watch that. But the Irvin story is that he like stabbed a teammate, like getting the whole, all the details on that, all the stories on the drugs. Barry Switzer just came out and said he was going out and getting drunk during Super Bowl week because he wanted to relish it.
Just like you, John.
Hey, I mean, Super Bowl week, man. You do your job. You do your Belichick job, yeah. And then you enjoy yourself.
If I haven't told the story already at the New York Super
Bowl,
is
this the 89 things to know about the Super Bowl?
John did not do his job, and I had to do them with the flu.
It was your flu game, Ryan. I know you needed a flu game.
It was Breach's flu game, and he no-showed.
Brinson, bringing up the Favre dynamic. You guys want a fun fact? Brett Favre's first comeback of his NFL career was against the Bengals in 1992. My dad kicked a field goal with under 90 seconds left to put the Bengals up by six, and then Favre threw a 35-yard touchdown pass with 10 seconds left.
You know what the lesson is there? The Bengals should have gone for it on fourth down.
I mean, that probably is not the lesson. But
how far was it? Fourth and five or fourth and one? What was the?
I don't know. I don't know the downs, Ryan. I don't have the down and distance in my head.
I thought you were looking at the old playbook there.
Oh no, I wasn't. That was straight from the memory.
Gotcha.
What are some other, I guess, like.
I, no one asked me, so I will tell you. I'm going with Dan Marino, because Dan Marino, to honor Pete Prisco, is the best player to ever play the game. And he didn't win a Super Bowl. So I think that journey would be interesting. You can start at the very beginning. He grew up in, Western Pennsylvania in Pittsburgh. Wasn't drafted by the Steelers because, they drafted Gabe Rivera, I think, an offensive lineman who got hurt, or defensive lineman who got hurt in a car accident shortly after his career started, and he was whatever, the third or fourth or fifth quarterback taken. I think partly because there were some concerns that he was using drugs or something. I think that was the rumor back then. I don't remember what it was, but obviously the Steelers.
That is correct, I believe.
Yeah, their fortunes would have certainly changed if they had drafted him instead of going with, they still had Terry Bradshaw at that point. But that, and then going to Super Bowl early in his career and then being whitewashed, I don't remember off the top of my head the last time that he was in a Super Bowl, but I know he went early. And then just setting all sorts of records. I mean, the man threw for 5,000 yards in year two in 1984, 48 touchdowns. I mean, that is bonkers back in 84 when everything was, you know, run game and two wide receiver sets. So I'd watch that. I think it'd be interesting. It wouldn't be like the behind the scenes stuff. I don't think anyone would care. I don't think there was any drama that we knew about. Like, we knew about, had a sense of the Michael Jordan drama with Scottie Pippen and Jerry Krause and all that. But I don't think there was any of that, at least bubbling on the surface. Back in the 80s and early 90s, but just at sort of the arc of his career and how he never got a chance to win a Super Bowl, even though he was one of the best ever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm sort of with the Last Dance comparison. And I think that if you're picking a player who is the Michael Jordan of the NFL, the answer has to be Brady, right?
Yeah. In terms of winning, I don't think there was the friction with Brady. Like, Brady gets after his teammates, but not the way Jordan got after his teammates. And Joe Montana, I don't feel like, got after his teammates that way, or Dan Marino didn't.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, if anything, Brady, like, teams up with his coach and is like played along with what Belichick wanted in order to make it easier for Belichick to coach up his players in a certain way, which is not, you know, like, that organization had structure. The fascinating thing about, like, and maybe that's sort of why I think the Favre thing works too, is that, like, you know, you had Tony Kukoc, who was, had been basically designated as the future of the Bulls. And, you know, the Jordan thing works so well because you have a dynamic, like, a good and bad dynamic with Jerry Krause and Michael Jordan.
Yeah. And I think by most accounts, Jerry Krause was actually pretty good at his job.
He was. He's great at his job.
If he looked like Cliff Kingsbury, this isn't a documentary. I mean, I'm not even kidding. He looks like Jerry Krause. So, okay, it's easy for Michael Jordan to pick on him. Michael Jordan probably isn't coming after Cliff Kingsbury making those same decisions. But, you know, that's all part of it.
The other ones that Debo brought up that I think would be interesting, LT with the Giants. I feel like – I mean, it would be great. There's just been a lot of LT stories, or there's just so many stories. Is that – but maybe that's a good example, because it would be like a throwback to the nostalgia of the time. You know, you would get LT doing stuff off the field. If you had like an unprecedented year-long follow LT around with cameras, that would be insane.
Fun fact, you know the answer to this probably, but you know where LT went to college?
Yeah, obviously Carolina.
Do you know where he grew up? Went to high school. There's your fun fact.
New Jersey?
Williamsburg, Virginia, babe. Close. Williamsburg, Virginia. He was from Williamsburg, which is nuts.
Sean Payton tweeted out that he thinks the best combo all time, two sports, any two sports, only one player from one sport, one college, LT and MJ. Can you beat that? I don't think so.
I will say on LT real quick, there is already a documentary called LT, The Life and Times. Yeah. And if you guys haven't seen it, that is how big it was not. So maybe LT, you know, he's already given unfiltered and it didn't draw enough interest.
Well, right. But I mean, okay, let me ask you this. How much do you think that the quarantine boosted the success of The Last Dance?
A lot.
Yeah. What else you got to do?
I mean, they moved it up. Like, they released it earlier than they were planning to in order to capture, you know, people who were sitting around. And they ran out two episodes a night.
It would have been running during the NBA Finals this year. So that would have been interesting if there's someone like LeBron in it. I think there would have been a lot of interest still in that case. I think quarantine exceeds that, but I think it would have done pretty well if you got LeBron playing one night and then The Last Dance on the next night.
That is actually a good point, Debo. I just find it fascinating. Like, you know, I don't know that there's anybody in the NFL who meets the level to which people of a certain age and like this, you know, 10 to 15 year demographic. Like, Debo, I mean, I ask you this thing all the time. How old are you?
28.
Right. So what are your Michael Jordan memories? The Wizards?
The hair of the Washington Wizards and his final game of his career. I wanted to skip my Holy Communion to go to his game at in Philadelphia, and I was not allowed to do so. So I recorded that on VHS.
Ugh. Almost the same as being there, VHS.
So
the Bulls, that Jazz series, I was watching, but I'm not remembering.
Right. Like I remember I was at a Hams in High Point on Main Street watching with my dad when, you know, the shot of the push off of Byron Russell or whatever it was. Two guys stand out to me in terms of like getting hyped up, for this series. Kyle Brandt, friend of the show, is on Good Morning Football, is like a 90s nostalgia monster. Like, nobody loves nostalgia quite like Kyle Brandt. And you can see him getting hyped up for this and talking about like, you know, putting on, you know, old Jordans to wear for this. And then the other guy, our colleague and of course, friend of the program, Jonathan Jones, who actually filmed himself coming, or I guess his lady filmed him coming in and out of his closet, changing in and out of 42 different Michael Jordan jerseys. But I don't know that there's anybody, maybe in NFL history, that was idolized in the way that Jordan was by a group, by a demographic of people growing up in the 90s. Like, if you, I mean, maybe you did, like, I didn't really like, I wasn't a Jordan guy. I don't really know why, but I mean, everybody loved Jordan, maybe because I was a Duke fan growing up, but I mean, like, Jordan was the guy. Like, Tiger Woods is maybe the closest thing. And I just don't think golf resonates quite the same way as basketball.
Yeah, growing up, like Campbell University, Bowie's Creek, North Carolina, they had the first ever basketball camp, like summer basketball camp. And Michael Jordan would come there when I was in fifth, sixth grade.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me get the math right. I must have been.
I went to Bobby Hurley's basketball camp at Bowie's Creek.
Oh, I didn't know he had one there. So yeah, early on, like in the 80s, the basketball camp may have started in the 60s or 70s. I don't know, but Jordan would come, and all the ACC guys would roll through there, and it was no big deal. It was a big deal for me, obviously, but it was no big deal to expect them to be the ACC guys. So I remember Jordan back when he was in college, and him leaving early was huge. In fact, I don't know if you know the answer to this joke, Brinson, you may be too young. Do you know the only person on earth capable of keeping Jordan to 20 points?
The Monstars?
David Thompson.
Dean Smith.
Oh, good one.
That was a joke when he was there. And, you know, obviously we learned in the documentary Dean told him to go. I didn't remember that at the time. Just remember being upset. But he didn't have a great junior year either. That was sort of a surprise because they were the number one team, if I remember correctly, going into that year. But, yeah, no, I remember Jordan throughout. In fact, I quit watching sort of NBA once he left the Bulls the first time. I was sort of out of it. I was off, sort of like the same thing with golf and Tiger Woods. But, yeah, so those were some crazy times. And I was a UNC fan, so I wasn't like Brent's a Duke fan.
Yeah, I do feel like anyone who is kind of a kid of the 90s, because, like, I was in elementary school during the Jordan years, and that was the last time I, you know, like, I totally remember – the Bulls Jazz Finals. I think that was his final one, the last game with the Bulls. I remember their 72 win season. I remember when they signed Rodman and how crazy that was, because that had been a big deal. They had trouble. Jordan and the Bulls had trouble with him when he played for the Pistons. So I mean, that was really that. And then the NBA kind of had a lull. You know, I guess Kobe Bryant was there and Shaq was there, but yeah.
The NBA went through a. It wasn't, I don't know if it's a drought, but like, I mean, they had Kobe. Kobe's a superstar, but like, it was a superstar drought of sorts, and it's come back now, and it's in great shape.
I don't think anyone in the NFL can ever be capable of being as popular as someone in the NBA. The NBA is a superstar driven league. As a fan, you go to games based on the opposing team that's coming to your city. You're never going to do that in the NFL. And
that's a Philadelphia sports fan, folks.
That's not the case.
Well, I agree with him. If we went to the other side of the world and asked someone to name five NBA players and five NFL players, I think they would have a lot easier time naming the NBA players.
I mean, I would say that, like, with Tom Brady, like, what's his Q rating? I mean, not his Q, but like, what's his popularity score? If you poll 1,000 random NFL fans, what percentage actually like Tom Brady? Cause it might be like 70. And Jordan would be like 90.
Right. In the NBA, I think it's fine for you to root for players on other teams. I don't do that. But I don't think anybody can ever be as popular as MJ. The closest football player is probably OJ, and he was before 1994.
Oh, what a preface that, Debo. Get that in there.
He was insanely popular, though. I mean, Debo's right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he was probably the closest thing.
But you do see it with the superstars in the NFL. Like, there's a bunch of Patriots fans that are going to be cheering for the Buccaneers this year that are going to be – they want to watch Tom Brady, see how he does. Same thing happened with Peyton Manning when he left the Colts. A lot of those Colts fans said, you know, I'm cheering for Peyton Manning to win a Super Bowl with the Broncos, you know, as long as the Broncos don't beat the Colts in the AFC title game. So there are players who have been big enough that – Joe Montana's another one. When he went to the Chiefs, you had 49ers fans who all of a sudden were cheering for the Chiefs. So there are players who are big enough – where that happens.
What about non-former team fans, though? If it's like Jack Barr's fans, when Manning moves from the Colts to the Broncos, they're not following him there, whereas you could be a fan of Sacramento Kings or the Houston Rockets and still be a fan of Michael Jordan.
No, that's a good point. Or if, what's his name? Steph got traded somewhere. I would imagine people would be curious how that turns out more than Jaguars fans caring about.
I just think, though, that like even – like there, so with Jordan, there was no one. You might have been one of those people who like did like had a conspiracy theory against Jordan or didn't like him because you just didn't like the Bulls and you liked another team or whatever. But like, no one was having like. There's always some argument about quarterbacks. You know, it's like oh, like did you know did Brady? How much is it Brady and how much is it Belichick? It's like Manning, sure, but he only won one Super Bowl when he was like the key component of the offense. You know, Eli were yelling about like nobody, there was no questioning Jordan. Once they like obliterated people on the route to three titles and then he retired. He retired mid after winning three titles. He walked away from the game for a year and then came back and won three more. Like it was crazy compelling. And he like, you know, that was the last, you know, the finale aired last night, but before that it was like, you know, he released a press release that just said, I'm back. Like the level of superstardom. I mean, anything that happened with Michael Jordan was covered, like whether it was off the court or on the court, was covered in great deal at what I like to call the CNN level. And I just don't know that you get that. Again, maybe the Patriots at this stage, depending on what we're talking about, if it's a controversy, but like, you know, the Patriots, you know, week two curb stomping of the Bengals isn't getting CNN coverage.
Who is the most identifiable player to ever play in the NFL?
Ooh, Debo, that's a deep, deep question.
Like who you would like identify with or like most easily identifiable?
Yes, the second part.
Okay. I want to hear the answer to the first part, though.
I think that's how Breach took it, because he said a deep question.
I was going to say it's a kicker, because I'm short and kickers are short.
Probably Danny Woodhead or something like
that. No, Danny Woodcock, according to Joe Theismann.
That's right. Who's the most identifiable?
Only person would be like, are you talking about me?
I mean, it's probably Tom Brady.
Yeah.
But is it? What about Peyton Manning?
I just think Tom Brady's the most famous NFL player on the planet.
If you think about how many people like watch Super Bowls that don't watch any other football game all year long and how many Super Bowls he's played in, I think you have to say Brady.
Well, but again, when you go to the Super Bowl parties, those people aren't paying attention. They're watching the commercials and they're eating.
Yeah, but they still know Tom Brady. They hear his name over and over again.
Doesn't mean you can identify. My point is that it would probably who does the most sort of sponsorship stuff? Is that Tom Brady too?
To your point, then Peyton Manning would be up there because he has all those like pizza commercials.
Has Tom Brady ever hosted SNL?
I don't think so. Joe Montana and Peyton Manning have. Did Eli do it too?
Yeah.
Yeah, Eli did.
Dang.
Yeah, but Tom Brady's done some. He's done some. He did a Funny or Die skit. He's done some stuff.
SNL, Funny or Die skit. Yeah, those are about the same.
My wife says currently Tom
Brady. And Brady did host Saturday Night Live in 2005.
Ooh.
Oh, really?
2005. Yeah. Man.
That's really, really memorable episode there.
Was he dating Tara Reid at that point?
Tom Brady dating Tara Reid? What are you talking about?
He's the owner of Falafel City. That was a classic skit. Jeez, Brenton.
What do you mean, what am I talking about? He dated Tara Reid back in the day, I do believe.
What?
I don't know. I can't speak to this.
Because that was after the American Pie thing. Let me see if I'm making things
what?
Up. What? There you
go. I feel like we would know this. This is...
By the way, this is taking Debo's question a little bit out of context, but I honestly think if you were to just say who is the most identifiable fireable NFL player, Colin Kaepernick would be
That's sort of my point.
Because non-football fans know who Colin Kaepernick is.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. Exactly.
That's why I initially brought up OJ, because you could be a fan of football in the early 70s, you could be a fan of football and now, and non-football.
OJ might be the answer. That might be the actual answer.
Yeah.
I think my construct of this question is I don't think there's any direct comparison to MJ, and that's kind of like the point of this exercise, but to kind of point out the closest thing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about football. Everyone wears helmets, so you don't know who's who unless they did something really, really good or, in OJ's case, really, really bad.
Because they have a mugshot?
Well, that and typically when you do a news segment on someone who murdered someone, you don't put them in a football helmet.
Are you saying DeAndre Baker is going to shoot up the most identifiable NFL player list?
Maybe we don't use the verb shoot up to describe DeAndre Baker.
Reach.
I didn't use anything. I would just.
World's worst lawyer, John.
Would Brett Favre get run as the most identifiable ever? He said something about Mary.
Yeah,
that's true.
But I mean.
There you go, like Terry Bradshaw, who's in other media.
And yeah, that's the other thing.
Super, super popular in the 70s.
Tom Brady was in Ted, too.
You could even say that Michael
Myers.
Because Michael Strahan now hosts Good Morning America, and he's on
whatever
Regis and Kathy's called. I don't know what they call it now. But
Dan Marino was an Ace Ventura. Come on.
Breach, I know you looked at the Wikipedia page for every NFL player in a movie, but I'm trying to make a point about Michael Strahan.
Evan Smith was in Little Giants.
Oh, that's a great – are you on that Wikipedia page?
Jim Brown's resume, his IMDb.
Yeah,
I think of it as like, okay, if you take headshots with no names on them, and you like show them to my mom.
She probably knows Michael Strahan, I would imagine. Does she watch Good Morning America?
She might not know Strahan. She would 100% know Tom Brady. AK says it is definitely one of Peyton or Brady.
He was just as popular in China as he was in America, where the football players might be close to a basketball star in America, but they can't compete.
But would she know who Sloth from the Goonies is? Because he was played by an NFL player. Apollo Creed from the Rocky movies, played by an NFL player. So
Terry Crews, NFL player. Yes, we get it, John. We know how this works.
Terry Crews did not play Apollo Creed, Ryan. My God.
What's his face?
I'm gonna text my mom pictures of
Carl Weathers played Apollo Creed and John Matusak played Sloth.
Carl Weathers, also in Mandalorian.
Carl
Bondo!
Weathers.
Good. That was a great impression, Sean.
This is the way.
All right, let's move on. Brinson, you can text your mom.
Texting my mom a picture of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
And Sloth. Add Sloth.
I'm trying to find
a picture of Sloth.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to find a picture of my of Tom Brady and a Sloth. Why am I sending a picture of Sloth?
Because Sloth is played by a former NFL player, so maybe that is more identifiable to her.
But to my mom?
Yeah. Did your mom watch the Goonies?
I'm sending I'm sending my mom a picture of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, not in uniform. So in other words, like sending him a picture, my mom a picture of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in ties. This would be my argument is like, I think you see Peyton Manning, you're like, that's obviously Peyton Manning. I think like a person who doesn't follow football at all could see a picture of Tom Brady in like, at like the Met Gala and be like, that's the dude from Dexter.
That's a movie star. Exactly. Peyton Manning is a super unathletic looking guy with a huge head who is really, really good at his job.
Yeah.
But are we saying the most recognizable? Because, like, I do think that Devo's original answer of O.J. Simpson is probably the most recognizable name. But if we're bringing pictures into this, then, you know, like, that adds another element.
I think you're overthinking it.
Identifiable. So, like, if you see him on your TV, do you know – can you identify who they are?
I can identify Sloth.
Why do you keep saying this?
Because he's played by an NFL player.
I think he's dying. He's planting his flag on his hill and he's dying on it.
Oh, all right. Wilson, Tara Reid claims she made out with Tom Brady.
I remember that back in the day. 2002, which was right after Tom Brady's ascent. Because she also dated Kyle Bowler. So I don't know.
What year did you get married?
2001. Almost 20 years.
So 2002, you were freshly married, hanging out, like going around to like different like hot spots in wherever the hell you live, maybe DC. You're listening to some Chumbawamba on the radio with the windows down, blasting Tub Thumper, rolling through Pittsburgh.
That's right, Pittsburgh, baby. Had hair. That was the most important thing.
What'd your hair look like?
He showed us a picture before, Brinson.
It was at the Super Bowl, right? I couldn't stop laughing. Yeah.
Of course, you know, by the way, the mom.
No, sorry, that's Dubin. That was Dubin.
That was Dubin. Yeah. Dubin had long hair, which is nuts.
The mom poll does have one fatal flaw, is that there's a 50% chance that my mom won't see these.
Your mom has a flip phone.
Top is a Manning, not sure about the bottom.
Yeah, your theory holds.
What did she say, Peyton or Eli? She just said a Manning?
Yeah, that's not really a point for Peyton if she can't.
Why not?
She can't distinguish the difference between Peyton and Eli. I don't know if that's a vote for Peyton.
Send her a picture of OJ.
And Strahan. OJ and Strahan. Maybe separately.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, part of the focus of the documentary is how anywhere MJ would go, he would just be swarmed by people, just thousands of people. I don't think that's ever been the case for NFL players to the same extent, but that's another way to kind of evaluate it. If someone went out in public at the peak of their powers, so for Jordan, it's 98. For Brady, maybe it's 05, or maybe it's now.
07.
07? Okay. How many people would be following them?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And also, like, MJ's 6'6", so he goes out, he's also sticking it like that. Tom Brady 6'4", 6'5", Peyton 6'4", 6'5". They go out, and either, as Brinson points out, that's a movie star, or you go, oh, that guy's probably an athlete, but I have no idea who he is.
Yeah, but like with Peyton Manning, they're so rich, they don't go out in public, or they do it like completely privately. It's also different because NBA team has to travel to 82 games a year, so they pretty much have to be out in public. They can't be protected against it. They're going to be out at some point. You're playing 8 road games in the NFL. You're playing 1 game a week. It's really easy to kind of stay under the radar. Because look, you know,
he's not talking about going to Applebee's. He just means in general, what is your identifiability
But
there's a reason we don't see these guys mobbed in public because like how many pictures? You don't see Peyton Manning show up on TMZ at a restaurant in Hollywood because that's not what he does. He keeps to himself.
So I mean, I don't know.
Michael Jordan doesn't show up on TMZ. I mean, like, he doesn't show up on TMZ now. He's in Charlotte all the time.
It's not like he's traveling on Greyhound to get to the game 30 years ago. They had
also. Also, like, you have to consider the circumstances here as well, is that Jordan was en route to winning a 6th consecutive championship with the year obviously off in between when he didn't play basketball. And his GM was actively, like, was refusing to bring back his head coach and basically saying F you to Jordan, who was still, like, at the peak of his powers.
Tom
like,
it's, Brady.
But
they're saying F you. They let him go. They didn't even make him an offer.
But like the Phil Jackson thing, Jordan said, I won't play for the Bulls unless Phil is here. And Jerry Krause is like, Phil's gone. And he's like going all in on Kukoc. I mean, I guess that's Jared Stidham.
Kukoc and Tim Floyd.
Is that the closest comparison for that angle of it? The star that doesn't get along with the front office member? I don't think, you know, Tom Brady's making short jokes to Bill Belichick.
I mean, I think the Peyton Manning neck surgery thing, like he got along with Bill Polian, but like there was clearly some friction, although I think that's the Favre.
Brent broke that news, but we didn't.
Well, then maybe Aaron Rodgers is going to be the answer, right, since they're trying to run him out of Green Bay.
Can we tell that story on the podcast?
You've told it before, I believe.
Have I? Have I told you that story?
I know the story. I don't know if you've told it on the podcast.
This is going to get you fired. Go ahead.
I'm not getting fired.
Ryan's like to you up. Yeah, it's fine.
If anything, we took the high road journalistically.
I guess.
What, dude, we could have. All right, so.
I think you can tell it because it's not like new news. Like, you know what I mean? It's already happened.
It was January 2012.
January 2012. We are at the Super Bowl working in Indianapolis. And we are sitting there in our little cubicle. And all of a sudden, three or four. And it was like this is back before CBS had any sort of production. We had like this little like curtain pulled back. And these three or four Indianapolis reporters come scurrying over. I don't want to name who they are. Just, you know, for the purpose of doing it. And they're doing the beat reporter thing where they're getting on a conference call with, somebody from the team and somebody from the Colts. And I think I can say who it was, right? It would qualify as a high level source, the highest level source you could possibly get as far as team matters, right? Like if, Mike Brown gave Breach a story about Joe Mixon having an injury, right? That would be the highest possible source you could get.
If he met him at the Starbucks, for example.
You see, right. If he ran into Mike Brown at like a Dunkin' Donuts and he fed him information about Joe Mixon, that would be the highest possible source you could get, right? Well, this was the highest possible source you could get on Peyton Manning. And we heard, like, it had been reported that Peyton had two neck surgeries, I think, Ryan, or one. Yeah, I think it was one. And we heard this person explained to these reporters that he had gotten four neck surgeries, and we were like, oh, like, and so they were all coordinated because it's all, you know, it's old school. This is pre really explosive blogging and all that. And it's like pre Twitter being huge, these guys coordinating how they were going to get their stories out there. And Wilson and I were like, man, we should run with this.
We should turn around and walk away.
Turn around and just write a story on CBS. It's like, high level source told CBSSports.com, but it felt like that would have been poor journalism. So, that's how we found out that Peyton had four neck surgeries before anyone else.
And then
Wilson found $20.
Peyton, by the way, the most identifiable person in the NFL.
Says who?
Everyone but Breach, apparently. He was on this sloth kick.
Mike Brown, the most identifiable man in the NFL. All right, let's take a break. Coming up after the break, we will do some mailbag.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
Okay, so Joe from Indy, maybe Jim from Indy. Jim from Indy, an anonymous high-ranking source, if you get my drift. Joe from Indy updated his review. Thank you, Joe, for taking the high road as well. Although a little weird to be like, I'll give you a 5-star review, and then he's like, the host, Will Brinson, tries hard.
points for honesty.
I mean, I don't think I do try hard.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Maybe that's him being nice.
Is he saying tries too hard or tries hard?
He is not saying tries too hard.
But tries too hard is an insult. Tries hard seems like it's a backhanded compliment.
Saying someone is a try hard is a backhanded compliment, but tries hard seems like a compliment. A try hard would be.
The Super Friends are a fun group.
If you call someone a try hard, it's definitely an insult.
Yeah. Try hard. This one is tries hard. So it's the difference between like the noun and the verb.
But I need to know if Joe left two, if he left it out or if he meant I try hard.
I think he meant it. He was being genuine.
Let me read what a try hard is according to the internet, and you guys can decide if it.
No. A try hard is different.
He knows he's about to get dunked on. He's trying to call timeout, get to the sideline before Breach can do it.
All right, coming up after this break. Go ahead, Breach. Read this.
All right, here it is. Rather than achieving an image through genuine personality, the try hard consciously attempts to fit a certain style through deliberate imitation, and this is usually a forced style.
Play the music!
Not playing the music!
And then it goes on to list an example. C. Oprah's.
What a big jam!
I don't think that, I would disagree. I would say that A, I do not try hard. And B, that I am just myself on the podcast. I don't do anything. Like, I'm just me.
But yeah, we should know, it does not say try hard. It says tries hard. Will Brinson tries hard. So maybe it does mean that you're actually trying hard. I mean,
yes, but I'm just confused. Does he think I try too hard? Does he think I'm a hustler?
I think he thinks you're not good, but at least you're trying hard. You know, because if you ever lead with a compliment about someone and be like, well, he tries hard, like in sports,
that means
you're not faulting the player. Like, he's just doing as well as he can. He just doesn't have the elite ability to be a good player.
But he's trying hard. That reminds me, the most identifiable, like inner identification NFL player, Wes Welker.
What? No. What? That's a...
It's sloth. We already figured this out.
No, Brinson.
He looks like every other guy in America.
No, Brinson.
Exactly! He's like me!
Brinson, send your mother-in-law a picture of Wes Welker and see what she does.
No, I'm not saying everyone will identify him. I'm saying that I can easily identify with Wes Welker as a short white dude who made it through sheer grit and hustle and trying hard. He continued to say, the Super Friends are a fun group with close to average gambling advice. So these are pretty clearly backhanded compliments.
True.
I
originally gave them a 1-star thanks to Pete giving bad dating advice. Here's the 5 stars, and I owe them a round of beer next time they're in Indy. Hopefully Will is with them for it.
Nice. He opens with a slap and then ends with a slap. I love it.
That's a listener who gets the show, though. Like, if you're insulting me on the iTunes podcast, you get it. Like a backhanded compliment, backhanded insults to me on iTunes.
Data use them.
All right. Mailbag question from the real Lucy P. Love the show, especially when it is a Super Friends pod. Anyway, my question is, if Dwayne Haskins has a bad year statistically and Washington has a top 10 pick, do they try to enter the Lawrence Fields, Newman, Lance sweepstakes, or do they give Ryan Wilson, you can answer this, Haskins another year?
They 100% enter the Lawrence Fields, Newman, Lance sweepstakes if they have a top 10 pick and Dwayne Haskins does not play well. Because, I mean, what are you waiting for? Next year's class, you could argue, it might be better than this year's class. I know a couple people love Trevor Lawrence more than Joe Burrow. I'm not one of those people yet. But, I mean, Justin Fields could be, and I'll give Barton Simmons credit for this, our guy at 247. He said this day three of the 2020 draft. We were talking about 2021 because why not? He said, Justin Fields, just give him a year. He's only been in that system a year at Ohio State. He could be leaps and bounds better, and he was really good last year. He may be better than Trevor Lawrence. So if some guy's there and you're a top 10 pick and you have a chance to move up, why not do it? We talk about, you know, tanking for Tua or Trevor. If you're not in a position to do it, I think you have to give it serious consideration, especially if Dwayne Haskins, doesn't progress as much as you want. How long are you going to wait on Dwayne Haskins?
I would get rid of him this year and sign Cam Newton.
I wanted to draft Tua.
I agree. Like, I think to that point, Sean, the Tua thing, like, I think to me, this is the compromise for Ron Rivera to not draft Tua, which is, okay, we're going to go with Chase Young. We're going to give Dwayne Haskins a year. Like, if you draft Tua, you're putting yourself potentially at odds with your boss and Dan Snyder, who wanted to, who, that was his pick, Dwayne Haskins, right? And if you give Dwayne Haskins another year and Haskins doesn't work out, you can go to Snyder and say, look, man, hey, we tried to make it work. We need to get a quarterback, and he's not the guy.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because the question specifically mentions, you know, they get a top 10 pick. Redskins went 3-13 last season. What if Dwayne Haskins goes 6-10? They end up with a 10th overall pick. Snyder's like, oh, well, we improved. Let's give him another year. And Rivera's like, yeah, we didn't really improve. We need to get up there and get Trevor Lawrence. What do you do then?
If they win six games with Rivera.
If they win six games, they're not getting Trevor Lawrence, though.
But there's more than Trevor Lawrence. The real OCP listed four possibilities.
Right. So at the 10th slot, you go 6-10. Do you grab a quarterback?
I would trade up to 5 if you think that someone.
Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are not falling to 5.
Okay. Person who can see into the future.
Who was your number one pick a year ago, Brinson?
Jake Fromm, who fell to number 5 in terms of the 5th round. Good call, Brinson. Play the music.
There it is. Up and away,
that is an easy dunk, all right.
No, if they're at 10 and you can trade up to however far you have to trade up, you're not going to trade up to number 1, but if you can go to 5 and get someone who's there that you like.
Trevor Lawrence is going first overall, buddy.
Well, here's the thing. We thought Tua was going 1 and he fell to 5. So I take your point, Brinson. I don't see it happening, but you never know with injuries.
I just talked to you about Justin Fields. So yeah.
Okay, you're right. You're right. If Trevor Lawrence suffers a career-threatening injury and there's another national pandemic in March, then yes, it is possible he could fall.
What does the pandemic have to do with it?
Because the doctors couldn't check out Tua. What are you talking about? It was 4 freaking weeks ago.
Hey,
Breach. His voice got so high.
Yes.
I know.
That sounded like a cuss.
If the doctors had checked out Tua and he got a clean bill of health, he would not have gone number 1 overall.
He would have gone 2 overall.
I'll take it even a step further. You just said number 1 overall. I'll take it a step further. What if Tua did not get injured and Joe Burrow still threw 60 touchdowns? What do you think the Bengals are doing at number 1?
Brinson, he asked Tua me.
Tua would have gone 1-2. Burrow and Tua would have gone 1-2 is my
point. 1-2. But here's what I would ask you, Wilson. Does Tua's numbers improve at all because he was healthy the whole time? Like, what's the difference as far as Tua's numbers?
You mean when he was drafted?
No, his season.
Yeah, his college season.
His season was virtually over. It was at the end of November, so I think they only had a few games left.
What?
Well, right. Does he throw 5 touchdowns per game in those games? That's what I'm asking. Like, how much?
Oh, I don't know how many games he had left. I mean, his stats are what they – I mean, those. I don't think anyone's affected by the stats. They were just concerned about the hip.
Right. And if he does not suffer this hip injury and he goes lights out
– He played in nine games. I mean, he probably would have ended up playing 14 or 15.
Well, how many games did Alabama play?
Well, you play 12 – every college team plays 12 games. Alabama was going to make the SEC championship.
So what's the – I'm not looking at his stats. Do you have him in front of you, Breach? Like, how many touchdowns did he have when he got hurt?
I think they're asking if Tua kept the same pace and he finished the season, who would have gotten picked first, Burrow or Tua?
Exactly. And
he had 33 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. 33 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in 9 games.
Okay, so he throws 45 interceptions. Let's say he throws 50 touchdowns. Let's say he throws 50 touchdowns. That's still 10 fewer than what Joe Burrow threw. And Joe Burrow played at a much higher level. So Joe Burrow's going number 1.
And actually, let me correct myself on the 14 games, because LSU beat Alabama. And so Alabama would not have gotten to the SEC title game, but likely would have gotten into the playoff, in my opinion, if Tua had been healthy the whole time and they went out their only losses to
I don't think anyone, 90% of people, I would imagine, if you ask them around the league, they would take Joe Burrow over Tua, number 1, assuming all else equal health-wise.
If Tua plays out the entire season and Burrow has the season he still had, Burrow is going first.
Yep, that's what I just said.
Right, and I'm confirming it.
But you said Tua was going number 1, just like you're saying Trevor's going number 1. Those are
I'm saying that they would have gone 1-2. I don't care what the order is, and Burrow would have gone first. Look, I was just confirming your point after you, the NFL draft analyst, said, how many games did he play? I don't know.
Why would I know how many games Tua played? I know he got hurt in late November. That's all I needed to know.
Surely somebody agrees that Ryan should have known how many games Tua Tagovailoa played in 2019.
Yes, Wes Welker agrees with you. All right, next question.
Also, he got hurt in. He got hurt. No, he got hurt in November.
Oh, I knew that though. Didn't give me any points for that, did you?
No. Moving along. Cut that part where I acknowledge Wilson was right out. Great pod. This is from Blanco the Black on Apple Podcasts. Always fun to listen to. Great content both on and off season. I think even in and off season, but that's okay. It feels like a bunch of friends just talking about football. Well, we're not friends, but we are talking about football. Question, how would the – well, Sean and John and I are friends. How would the Broncos' win total change with a different quarterback, say Winston, Rivers, Mahomes, or Burrow? Thank you for giving us great content. I think that those answers are all different. If Mahomes is on the Broncos,
11.5.
I'd say 10.5. Because yeah. Without Andy Reid, no Andy Reid. We're assuming no Andy Reid here. Yeah, I would say 10.5 for Mahomes.
What is it now? I'm sorry. What's the win?
Seven and a half juice to the over. I would say that
Rivers 8.5, 9.5, 8.5. Yeah,
I don't think it'd be high. Colts are 8. Colts are 9.
So 8.5 Broncos.
8.5 feels right.
Could you imagine Patrick Mahomes' offense coordinator being Pat Shurmur?
Shermer's actually a good offensive coordinator.
That's what it would be in Denver.
Jameis Winston on the Broncos. That's an interesting one.
Jameis Winston. I love how they spelled his name. I'm going to start calling him Jameis Winston.
Winston.
He's French.
8?
I'm going to say it wouldn't change that much.
Yeah, I think it goes up at least a game.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Would you rather have Drew Locke on Team A or Jameis Winston on Team A?
I mean, John Elway would rather have Drew Locke, apparently.
Yeah. So I think it's probably stays the same. That's I agree with that.
I don't know if I would take the over 8.5 on the Broncos if they had Jameis. I'm not sure about that.
No, I wouldn't.
It'd be interesting though.
Well, although you know, my joke is he can see now, but I'm not willing to bet a lot of money on him winning 9 games.
And then with Joe Burrow, I would say
7.5.
I think it's probably the same.
I put it 8.5 on Joe Burrow.
I think part of the problem is you have to incorporate this offseason. And so, like, Pat Shurmur, yeah.
I'm fine with that.
I mean, Burrow is almost certainly an upgrade over Drew Locke, so I think it probably needs to be a little bit higher. Man, Burrow on that offense would be fun. Mm-hmm. All right, theory tips. This is from Slivy17. Gentlemen, great show. I'm a landscaper in Georgia who listens to y'all when I work. That is freaking awesome. I love it. I love podcasts during yard work. It's fantastic. So, first off, thanks for that. It really is a good show and makes some of the hard work pass faster. Secondly, even though I grew up in Alabama playing football as a kid, we were never really taught the bird's eye view theory of it all. I recently discovered Film Don't Lie University on YouTube. It's a great segment that I'm not sure is still running, but it goes over stuff like pre-snap reads or identifying if a particular defensive arrangement will leave portions of the field open to bring pressure from a particular angle. Do you have suggestions for similar sources of education such as that? Better yet, would y'all mind adding some of that into your discussions? Best to everyone, Steven. You know, actually I saw Jeff Schwartz tweet out something today or on Friday. He's doing a series of X's and O's, where he discusses, how to, like the first one was like, protecting, blocking and protecting in an empty formation, which, so there's some good stuff you can check out from Jeff Schwartz's feed.
I would say that, you know, like if you want to see the bird's eye view, quote unquote, of football, you should subscribe to Game Pass because they have the all 22. And that's not going to explain to you directly what's going on, but it is a good way to kind of understand the game. You can say you see a receiver who burnt a corner got burnt, or a safety who blew a coverage. You watch all 22 the next day and see exactly what happened, why it happened, how it happened. But I would say as far as our podcast goes, and kind of what Brinson would just mention with Schwartz on Twitter, I'm sure he's doing a video. If there's a video component, it's a lot easier to describe what's going on with the all 22. But when you're audio only, you know, as we are right the second, although we might be video soon, right, Debo? You know, then you're getting into – you're talking about a lot of moving parts, and it kind of gets confusing.
And it's also one of those things where you do need more time to be able to go back and watch that. And, like, when we freeze – for example, have a Sunday night show, we are reacting to the games like right after they happened. These aren't video recommendations, but Crispy Brown has written two really good books on football that go a lot into different types of offenses, different types of defenses and whatnot that I would recommend. And it's really easy reading.
Yes. Smart football.
Film Don't Lie is Brett Coleman, who I actually found out about like January, and he's awesome. Like he works, like he's a self-employed. He does all on the YouTube channel. And he does really good stuff. His website, I think it's just Brett Coleman. His YouTube channel still, I don't think it does less the film, Don't Lie and more just sort of X's and O's.
He does a ton of stuff. I mean, like he did it.
Great. It's one of the best resources like online, especially during draft season. And another, YouTube channel I mentioned that I stumbled on like last month and is my new favorite go-to YouTube channel. JT O'Sullivan, the former backup quarterback, forever. He's played everywhere and he talks about it on his YouTube channel, the QB School. So that's what it's called. QB School YouTube. It's there and he does all sorts of like breakdowns and he does them frequently, like 3, 4, 5 times a week sometimes. Right now he's going through a lot of the college players we're talking about, like the quarterbacks. He did Trevor Lawrence last week. He did, Justin Fields this week. He just did Trey Lance on Friday and, he does X's and O's and it's like geared towards the quarterback. But I mean, if you're interested in seeing what a quarterback's doing and what he's trying to do in terms of coverage and stuff, it is invaluable. Like he's been doing it for like a year and a half, maybe 2 years. So you can go through his stuff and see all sorts of things. And you can spend hours just watching stuff and you actually learn. He's great at explaining it. So I would check out the QB School with JT O'Sullivan on YouTube.
I've got one too. And I think you have to be a little bit careful too, because there are a lot of people who put stuff on Twitter where they're like this, this, and this. And it's like, I'm not really naming anybody in particular. I don't want to question the bona fides of anybody, but like, I've had a discussion with a former NFL quarterback who shall remain nameless, who was like this, it was Brady Quinn. Brady saw me retweet something from somebody that was like looking at a quarterback prospect. And this person has since proven to be crazy and wrong and regrettably retweeted. This person has weird stances on Marcus Mariota. But Brady texted me, was like, what are you doing? Don't retweet. Like that is dead wrong. And I guess my point is that like you have to be careful about what you're reading on Twitter when people talk about certain concepts and how something works in an offense, because that isn't all, like, it's not always accurate. You know, just like somebody who learned it straight off there. Ted Wynn at the Athletic is, really good at doing film breakdowns. I would highly recommend his stuff. You have to have an Athletic subscription, but he doesn't do video. The other one that, is sort of like, it should be the most obvious and, nobody really thinks about it. The Patriots do the Belestrator. Bill Belichick breaks down tons of film. They've been doing it for years and it's on YouTube and it's on Patriots.com. Like if you Google Belestrator, you can look at from November 18, how Aaron Rodgers' weapons will test the Patriots secondary. From, 2017, it's a 6.5 minute, breakdown of the Buffalo Bills. May 2018, he did breaks down the Falcons offense. So there's tons of really great stuff and it's Belichick and Scott Zolak, unicorns and rainbows, talking about football. And it's actually really compelling content because it's Belichick doing film study. Okay. Moving along. Mailbag. Great show. Not really a question, but we'll allow it. Sure. Sounds good. Brinson, if you're going to make ridiculous predictions every episode, bet on the Jags to win the AFC South. How dare you, CJ Bright? Phillip Rivers is washed. What? The Titans are going to regress, and Houston is overall a much weaker team than last year. Minshew is going to play his butt off this season. You all said that Jacksonville is a better team now than this time last year. ... Discuss.
Well, look, CJ's claim that the Jaguars winning the division wouldn't even rank the top five craziest things you've said over the last month. So I think he's on to something.
Where would it rank with the Garrett Bradbury prediction?
Oh, this would be like 50th. Garrett Bradbury, Trent Williams for Offensive Comeback Player of the Year.
I mean, the Jags are like 12-1 to win the division. So it's not like it's not even remotely as crazy as Garrett Bradbury, who had no odds, or Trent Williams at 140, who has since moved to 50-1. Wilson, I see you quivering in your boots.
A lot of stuff. You notice how many times Brinson has brought this up. He brought it up on Slack. Ryan tagged Ryan. Ryan did not respond. Then we started texting in the group. He sent it again in the group chat. Did not respond, and now he has to bring it up on the podcast.
Out here moving lines, baby.
You know what the sad thing is about Jacksonville is that maybe Phillip Rivers is going to be washed. Maybe the Titans do regress, and yes, Houston is overall much weaker, and yes, we all think the Jags got better, but we still think they're the worst team in the division, despite agreeing with almost everything this person wrote.
Is there any chance that Houston finishes last?
Yeah, if Watson gets hurt, this team's gonna be picking for like the top pick.
Say that about almost any team.
We're running short on time here, but I feel compelled to make You know, I'm a truthful man, an honest man. You know, morally, I have a moral code. So I'm going to do something I don't like to do, and I'm going to admit sort of a mistake.
Oh, good.
So as it turns out, the Trent Williams odds on my local site were 140 to 1. They were actually 50 to 1 at William Hill when we did the pod. So I guess this is where Ryan would say, play the music.
Oh! What a big jam! Wallace took it in his hands and said, up, up, and away! Dipsy-doo, dunkaroo!
The best part, as Sean pointed out, is that you were bragging about the odds changing for the last
Brinson giving out odds from like some offshore site in Madagascar. What are you doing, Brinson?
That is a self dunk. I didn't
get it. 140 at least?
I got 140, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, either 100 or 140. I can't remember. I think it's 140. But you know what? Through my shenanigans, I got Ryan to give me 140 too.
Yes. And I look forward to not getting that $25 when it's due to me.
It'll be 30 when Mr. Trubisky thing. Okay. That's it. By the way, we should point out, just very quickly, this was left before the DeAndre Hopkins trade, but, you, the 1103 asked, as a lifelong Texas fan, Bill O'Brien's head coaching is bad, but how do we feel about him as a general manager? Thanks, Josh. P.S. Brussels sprouts are not a Thanksgiving food. He left that back in February. We collect these and then answer them. And yes, shortly thereafter, DeAndre Hopkins was in fact traded, therefore cementing as he edited it. He was like, I think we have an answer now. Yeah, that was certified when Bill O'Brien decided to trade DeAndre Hopkins.
Agreed.
Okay, that's it for the show. Happy Monday. Hope you're doing well. Make sure and check out Pete Prisco's Top 100 coming up on Wednesday. We'll talk to Pete for Wednesday's show. We'll have a bunch of breakdowns of it. We'll criticize him. We'll tear him apart. And talk to you guys later.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.